my new book by bringing us all together to learn a little bit about Tisha B'Av, about the teachings of Rav Soloveitchik, in a way that helps make the forthcoming days more meaningful and important to us. In particular, I want to express a really tremendous sense of Hakaras HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving me the stamina and the strength to be able to finish this book. It's been 9 years in the works, and it's a question in the poskim whether you make a Shachiyanu B'Shem Malchus when one finishes a Sefer. Is that enough to be Machayev a Bracha B'Shem Malchus to make a Shachiyanu? But were I to make a Shachiyanu, I certainly would make one for the completion of this Sefer. And I hope those of you who will get it and read it will find it meaningful. What I want to do today is dafka not do what's in the Sefer. You don't need me now for what's in the book. You have the book. But I want to work around some of the themes that I present in the book based on the teachings of the Rav and try to add a little bit of my own perspective. This book was written in Rabbi Soloveitchik's voice. There's a lot of I in here, and the I is a reference to the Rav. It's based on transcripts of talks that he gave, and my voice, with the exception of my short introduction, is totally absent from this book. And now I want to put myself a little bit more into the equation, and of course, primarily invite you to read the book for the real substance of the benefit that you could gain from it for Tisha B'Av. Mishnah says in Maseches Tainis, there are more sheets on the way, so if you don't have, hopefully, at least you're sitting next to somebody to start who has, and then Levi was kind enough to agree to make some more sheets. The Mishnah says in Maseches Tainis, Dav Chavav, Chamisha Dvarim, Iru Asavosenu B'Shevasu B'Tamuz, V'Chamisha B'Tisha B'Av. That the Mishnah outlines five historical events that we commemorate on Shavuot B'Tamuz, and five historical events that we commemorate on Tisha B'Av. Obviously, you understand that we can only be talking about events that predated the writing of the Mishnah. There are a number of events that happened after the writing of the Mishnah, but clearly the Mishnah can only refer to that which it knows. What are the five events? B'Shavuot B'Tamuz, Nishtavru Haluchos, the Luchos were broken, Ubotal HaTamid, the carbon tamid was no longer allowed to be brought, v'hufka ha'ir, probably the most famous event that we commemorate on Shavuot B'Tamuz is the breach of the city of Yerushalayim. V'saraf apostumus asatora, apostumus burnt a Torah, we're not sure exactly who apostumus is, when apostumus lived. And finally, v'he'emid tzelem behechol, and v'hu he'emid, and he placed the tzelem in the hechol. Again, it's very obscure, it's very unclear. We don't know whether it's Veheemid. Rashi's Gersa is Vehu Amad Tzelem Behechol. It's Veheemid, so the antecedent is Apostumus. If it's Vehu Amad and it was placed, then the subject could be anybody. It's a lot of interesting lack of clarity on these events when it comes to Shavuot B'Tamuz. But that's for another occasion. The Tisha B'Av, what are the events that we commemorate on Tisha B'Av? Nigzer al avosenu shelo yechnesu la'aretz, during the time of the Meraglim, and the Meraglim came back with the negative report. So vayifku ha'am ba'layla ha'hu, the Pasuk says, and it's quoted in the Gemara right below on Tainus Chav Tesem et Aleph, that they cried on that night, and that night was the night of Tisha B'Av. Also, layla le'al Tisha B'Av haya, amar lam HaKadosh Baruch Hu, atem b'chisen b'chiyah shel chinam, that the Jewish people lacked the faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go into Eretz Yisrael, and that expressed itself most powerfully and most poignantly on the night of Tisha B'Av, and that's the first tragedy that we commemorate on this day. Next, continues the Mishnah, V'charav habayis barishona u'bishniya, two and three of the five, that is two out of the five, numbers two and three are the destructions of the Bate Mikdash, clearly again the central historical event that we commemorate on this day, first based on Mikdash and second based on Mikdash. And then number four, Venilkata Beitar. Beitar was captured. Again, not clear exactly when. Mishnah doesn't give us any information. And then Venechra Shahir is even more unclear. And the city was plowed up. What interests us is numbers two and three, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. If you ask somebody, what is it that we commemorate On Tisha B'Av, we commemorate the destructions of both Batei Mikdash. And I first want to draw your attention to the proof texts that the Gemara brings to show that, in fact, both Batei Mikdash were destroyed on Tisha B'Av. So how do you know? The Gemara says, Charav Habayis Barishona Minola. It's at the end of the second wide line in the second half of the first page. So how do you know that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the first one was destroyed on Tisha B'Av? And the Gemara answers in good Jewish fashion by asking another question. Namely, there's a contradiction in the Psukim. One Pasuk says that the city and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on the 7th of the month of Av, and the second Pasuk says that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on the 10th of the month of Av. So in order to answer the question, how do you know it was the 9th? The Gemara poses a discrepancy in the biblical texts. One Pasuk says the 7th, and one Pasuk says the 10th. V'tanya, and the Gemara says, it's seven lines from the wide lines, towards the middle of the line, a little bit past the middle of the line. V'tanya, here's where I want you to look inside. I'ef shalomar b'shiva, shaharei kvar nemar ba'osar. So how do you understand this contradiction? Can't say it was the 10th, because there's another pasuk that says the 7th. You can't say it was the 7th, because there's another pasuk that says it was the 10th. So how could it be? So then the Gemara lays out the scenario of what happened during the days leading up to Churban Bayis Rishon. Okay, tzad. B'shiva nichnasu nachram lehechol, v'ochlu v'kilkulu bo shvi'i shmini, Uchi'i samach l'chashecha hitzisu bo es ha'or v'haya dolek v'holech kol hayom kulo. It's an amazing scenario. What happened? On the 7th, the enemies broke into the Harabayis and they fought and destroyed and devastated the 7th, the 8th, and in the 9th in the afternoon, ubichi'i samach l'chashecha, they actually put fire to the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash itself began to be destroyed Tisha B'Av afternoon, Samach L'Chashecha, which is late afternoon, and the Beis HaMikdash remained burning for the entire day of the 10th. So, therefore, says the Gemara, I've solved the discrepancy problem. One Pasuk says 7, one Pasuk says 10. Well, it started on the 7th. That's when they first came to the Harabayis. And it ended on the 10th, because it's on the 10th that the Beis HaMikdash actually physically was devoured and destroyed. Says Rabbi Yochanan, Umale ha'yisi ba'oso hador lo kavate velo ba'asiri. Rabbi Yochanan says, if I was living then, I would have made Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av. Why would I have made Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av? Mepnei sherubo shel heichal bo nisraf. When did the Beis HaMikdash start burning? Tisha B'Av when? In the late afternoon. Tisha B'Av was 85% over when the Beis HaMikdash started to burn. When did the Beis HaMikdash Rubo burn? It burned through the following night, the night of the 10th, and the day of the 10th. So Rabbi Yochanan says, I would have made it on the 10th, because that's 90%, 95% of the Beis HaMikdash burnt on the 10th. So why did we do it on the 9th? V'rabbanon aschalta d'puranusa adifa. We start with the beginning. But we just finished saying that the beginning is the 7th. But it's not that beginning. It's the beginning of the burning. When was the beginning of the burning? Tisha B'Av, late afternoon. So Memela, we say that we commemorate the day of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av. So I just want you to keep this in your mind, and there's something really ironic and extraordinary, namely, that the Beis HaMikdash is still standing for most of Tisha B'Av. When is the Beis HaMikdash begin to be destroyed? Tisha B'Av late in the afternoon. Now, halachically speaking, lahalacha, what happens after Chatzos on Tisha B'Av? Some say it's after Chatzos, some say it's after we finish the recital of Kinos. There's a difference in the Mechaber and the Ramah. What happens Tisha B'Av afternoon? We know that there are a whole series of kulos, there are a whole series of leniencies that begin to take effect. So, for example, the minig is to sit on the floor or sit on a low bench. So what happens at Tisha B'Av afternoon? Thank you very much. Anybody, if anybody needs a copy, what happens Tisha B'Av afternoon? I remember Rabbi Soloveitchik used to say all the years in Boston, around 1, 1:32, he would say, what time is it? Is it Chatzos? Is it after Chatzos? okay, you don't have to sit on the floor anymore. So even in the middle of kinnis, the minig is later in the afternoon, you don't have to sit on the floor. What else do we do on Tisha B'Av afternoon that's a kula that we don't do beforehand? What else? What? We put on tefillin in the afternoon. We don't put on tefillin in the morning. We what? I can't hear you. Okay, we, the parochas goes back. What? That's problematic. It's problematic. Talmudar actually, technically speaking, doesn't shift after mincha. Technically speaking, doesn't shift after mincha. What do we say for the first time that we didn't say a whole Tisha B'Av? We say a tefillah called in mincha, a tefillah called Nachem. When do we say Nachem? In the afternoon. Isn't that an irony? Dafka, the time of the Beis HaMikdash is burning, we're saying Nachem. I want to come back to it. There's another kula is that we could start preparing the Seuda for the breaking of the fast. We could do after Chatzos. There are a number of leniencies that happen after Chatzos. Dafka, ironically, at the moment when one would imagine the level and intensity of the mourning should be even stronger, because that's dafka when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. That's Ad Kan, the first Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, how do you know the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av? So I told you. This pasuk says 7, this pasuk says 10, and we paskan like the Rabbanon, Aschalta de Puranusa Adifa, it started to burn on the 9th. Now, Ubishniya Minolan, how do we know about the second Beis HaMikdash? How do we know the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av? And here you understand that Chazal didn't have recourse to the same kind of an answer that it had to the question of the first Beis HaMikdash. In the case of the first Beis HaMikdash, they're psukim. We have a biblical canon that still is in effect, they're psukim. So you have a pasuk in Melachim, you have a pasuk in Yirmiyah. By the time you come to the second Beis HaMikdash, the biblical canon is closed. So the Gemara wants to know, I'll talk to you afterwards. So the Gemara wants to know, Bishniya Minolan. So the Gemara says something fascinating. Desanya. So I leave you with just an interesting thought that requires more elaboration. The Gemara's question, Ubishniya Minolan, was the same question that similarly, conceptually, that the Gemara asked for the first Beis HaMikdash. Chorav Beis Bereshona Minolan. What does it mean, Minolan? Minolan means, how do you know? What does it mean, how do you know? It means, cite chapter and verse. Haraya, that was the question, because the Gemara answered in the case of the first Beis HaMikdash, this pasuk, and works through the whole Mahaloch to figure out exactly what happened. In other words, Minola means, cite me the text. Thank you. What's the second Beis HaMikdash? Chorva Beis Bishniya Minolan. Give me the text. How do you know? And what's the answer? The answer is not the kind of an answer that we would expect. The answer is not, well, you know, my Zayda, my Baba told me, the day we had a Kabbalah. How long is it from the time that the Gemara is written from the time of Korban Bayis Sheni? It's not terribly long. A couple of hundred years. So I have a Mesorah in my family. Klal Yisrael, there's a tradition, so I know. But what's the Gemara's answer? What's the Gemara's answer to the question of Bishniya Minolan? Megalgalin Zchus Liyom Zakai V'chova Liyom Chayev. Translate the words. One adds on, one rolls into good things, Zchusim, into good days. And chov liyom chayev, and bad things happen on bad days. So the question is, how do you know what happened on Tisha B'Av? The answer is, first of course it was going to happen on Tisha B'Av. What else was it going to happen? Tisha B'Av is a yom chayev. Now, what kind of an answer is that? Is that an answer to the question? The question is a historical question. The answer is not a historical answer. The answer is a theological answer. When did it happen? Of course, it had to happen on Tisha B'Av. When else is it going to happen? Tisha B'Av is a yom chayev. What made Tisha B'Av a Yom Chayev? Because of numbers 1 and 2, namely the Meraglim and the first Beis HaMikdash. Igivor and a Yom Chayev, once it's a Chayev, so Mamela, it had to happen on that day. Just conceptually, it's fascinating what the Gemara does. Now, this has halachic nafkaminis. This Megalgalin Chova Yom Chayev has halachic nafkaminis, and I xeroxed it for you. If you look all the way at the end of the Amid, the Gemara says, Mishanichnas Av, today is Rosh Chodesh Av. So you know the famous Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Mishenichnas Av is memaatin b'simcha." Memaatin b'simcha. Amar Rabbi Yehuda berei derav Shmuel bashilas mishmei derav. The last line on the Amid. Geshem shemishenichnas Av memaatin b'simcha. Kach mishenichnas Ador marbin b'simcha. Turn over the page. Chavtes on the days continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Papa. Amar Rav Papa, what does it mean? Shenichnas av mematin b'simcha. Amar Rav Papa, hilkach bar Yisrael de isle dina b'hadin nachri lishtamet minei b'av dereya mazle. Av has a bad mazle. Dereya mazle. So if you have to go to court, and you understand we're talking about a reality in a society where the court system was a priori already stacked against the Jews, so you don't want to put yourself into a complex, a dangerous situation in Chodesh Av because it's Reya Mazla. Mishenech Nasav, that's the practical nafgamina of Memat in Besimcha, the Gemara says, is stay away from anything that may be potentially problematic. Says Tosfos, top right hand side, and I underlined it for you. Amar Rav Papa, Hilkach Bar Yisrael de Islei Dina Bahadei Nachri Lishtamet Perish, Mishum Da Amar Le'el, Magalgin L'nchov L'yom Chayav. So this notion of Magalgin L'nchov L'yom Chayav, which on the face of it seems to be a theological notion, is now catapulted into halachic practice and has a practical nafkamina, in that we should try to avoid issues that may be potentially problematic. So the first word, the first phrase that I want you to think about in the context of Tisha B'Av is Yom Chayav. The terminology, the rabbinic terminology for Tisha B'Av is it's a Yom Chayav. And because it's a Yom Chayav, that alone was enough to prove to the Gemara that the second Beis HaMikdash also had to happen on that day. There was no independent evidence. They didn't go to Josephus. They didn't go to the Misora in the family. They didn't go to the Elder Bubba. They didn't go to what we would have expected them to go to. No. How do you know the second Beis HaMikdash? It's a Yom Chayav. Chayav things happen on a Yom Chayav. The second phrase that I want to draw to your attention, halachically, rabbinically, to define Tisha B'Av, is Huchpelu Botzoros. If you look at the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, and Daf Yud Ches Amud Vei is right below, the Gemara there, and we don't have time to go into the whole discussion, it's a fascinating discussion. The Gemara there talks about a nafkamina. There's a difference between Tisha B'Av Mitzad Echad and the other three, the Zechariah mandated fast days on the Mitzad Sheni, the fast of the fourth month of Shivasa B'Tamos, the fast of the seventh month, Tzom Gedalia, the fast of the tenth month, Asar B'Teves, are all mentioned in the Pasuk. It's right at the top of the Amid, Ko Amar Hashem Tzvakos, second line, Rosh Hashanah Yud Ches Amud Beis, Tzom HaRevi'i, Tzom HaChamishi, Tzom HaShvi'i, V'Tzom HaAsiri. Says the Gemara that there's a qualitative difference between Tzom HaChamishi and the rest of them. Back and forth, bottom line, what's the difference? Because Tzom HaChamishi, Nisan Ir, Sivan Tammuz Av, the fast of the fifth month Tisha B'Av, Ho'il V'Huch B'Lu Bo Tzoros, double Tzoros. Taisa says, what do you mean? We just read the Mishnah in Tainus that says that Achavasa B'Tamas was also Huch B'Lu Bo Tzoros. So the Taisa works his way around. Taisa says two answers to that question. But what's the halacha of Tisha B'Av? Tisha B'Av is a din in Huch B'Lu. Tisha B'Av is a din in double. What's the double? Taisa says, Tzora Achas Huch B'Lu Bo. There was one event that happened again, and what was that event? That event, Dafka, is the most significant event, namely the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash happens on Tisha B'Av twice, Huchbalu, and because it's Huchbalu, it has a halachic status that places it in a different place than the other Ta'aniyos that I mentioned in the Pasuk in Zechariah. So that's the second phrase. Tisha B'Av is Yom Chayav, and Tisha B'Av is Huchbalu. I want to draw a third phrase to your attention that dawned on me over the course of many, many years. And it didn't occur to me until one day it just happened and it all came together. And it's not a coincidence, and I think there's something significant here. So I read this Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Taniyos Perek Chamishi many, many, many times, and I just went right by it. And then I came back and I think there's something special. The Rambam at the beginning of the fifth parak in Hilchos Ta'anios, it's not Tanis, it's Ta'anios. There's also a typo on the title of the talk, so please be mindful of me. So the Rambam says in Parak Chamishi, Halacha Gimel, talks about the various events that were instituted, the historical fast days. In Parak Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet in Hilchos Ta'anios, the Rambam follows the same order as the Mishnah in Maseches Tainis. The Mishnah in Maseches Tainis, the first three prakim, deal with ad hoc fast days that are established in Eretz Yisrael when there is no rain and they need to be mevakesh from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to send rain. It's only in the last parak in Maseches Tainis where we deal with the mandated fast days. And the Rambam follows the same structure. So now we're at the end of Hilchas Taanis in the Rambam. The Rambam talks about the four fast days. And he mentions what they are, and then he gets to Tisha B'Av. The Tisha B'Av, Halacha Gimel, Perek Hamishi, it's five lines from the bottom. Hamisha Dvarim Irubo. Nusa, now we know. Nigzar al Yisrael b'midbar shalo yechnusu la'aretz, number one. V'charav habayis barishona u'bishniya, numbers two and three. V'nilka da'ir gedola u'beit arshma, etc., that's number four. And ubo b'yom hamuchad l'puranus nechrasha ha'ir. So for many years I read this Rambam, and I read the Rambam. And I find that the Rambam adds a little bit historical information to that which is found in the Mishnah. The Mishnah just says Nechrasha Beitar, Nilka da Beitar. So the Rambam tells me a little bit about Beitar. The Mishnah says Nechrasha ha'ir, the city was plowed up. So the Rambam tells me a little bit, fills in a little bit of the gap. Ubo bayom hamuchan l'puranos. So one year it struck me that what the Rambam is saying here is that there's a third language for Tisha B'Av, and that's called Yom Muchan. Yom Muchan. It's as if I see the Rambam writing this, and it's as if he says, okay, five things happened. The first thing happened. The second thing happened. The third thing happened. The fourth thing happened. And then he gives like a krechts. Nebuch. And on this day, the fifth thing happened. Ubiyom HaMuchan, it's like bang, 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 bang. Oy, a zift, a krechts. Ubiyom HaMuchan, it's a day, wow, it's like one after another, it's a yom muchan, luperanayos number five happened. And lo and behold, the phrase yom muchan is a significant one. On the night of Tisha B'Av, we also say kinnis. Most of the kinnis that we say, of course, is during the day of Tisha B'Av, but we say some kinnis at night after Ma'ariv. One of the kinnis that we say at night is a kina that is explicitly based on these five events. And the kina repeatedly invokes the language of the Mishnah and the image of the Mishnah, the five events that happen. And I xerox it for you at the bottom of page two. B'leil ze'eru bo chamesh me'oraos. On this night, five things happen. This is on the kinas from the night of Tisha B'Av. And then, Gozer al Avos Befroa Peraos, V'dovku bo Tsoros Mitzeros V'gamraos. Nebuch, terrible things happened. Tsoros clung to them, stuck to them. And then what's the next word in the kina? Yom Muchan Haya Befroa Peraos. So I say to myself, we're on to something. The Rambam's Yom HaMuchan L'Peraos is not Gitzach HaZog. You know, there's a terminology here. Yom Muchan L'Peraos. It's a day. What does it mean, Yom Muchan? It's a day that is, how would you translate Yom Muchan? It's set aside. It's destined. It's destined. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to say all the time that Tisha B'Av, he used the language, is what we would call jinxed. There's something fundamentally, inherently, in the heft of Tisha B'Av. He said there's no such thing as Kedushas Hayom of Tisha B'Av, halachically, but there is such a thing as a character of Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av's character is, it's a jinxed day. Bad things happen on this day. It's a Yom Muchan. It is predestined. It is set aside. It is determined. It's a Yom Muchan, and the Yom Muchan is a phrase now. Yom Chayav is a phrase. Huchpelu Botzaris is a phrase. And now Yom Muchan is a phrase. And the last example that fell into my lap a couple of years ago was the Abarbanel in Yirmiyah. If you look on page three. The Abarbanel in Yirmiyah, Perek Beis, Pasuk Chav Dalet, this is the famous Abarbanel that talks about the Spanish expulsion. So the whole world knows that one of the events, obviously it's not in the Mishnah, but after the Mishnah, one of the events that happened on Tisha B'Av was V'hoya Yom HaYitziyah Tezbav. And the Abarbanel should know, because the Abarbanel himself was one of the exiles from Spain in 1492. The edict of expulsion was signed by Ferdinand and Isabella at the end of March in 1492 in the Alhambra Palace in Granada. Those of you who have been to Spain, you go to southern Spain. There's a city called Granada. It's the Mamish south, south, south. There's this incredible palace, very Moorish, very Muslim, very Arabic. It's an amazing palace. It goes back to the 10th century, the Alhambra Palace. And in the Hall of the Ambassadors in the Alhambra Palace, which is there ad hayom hazeh now, in that room, Ferdinand and Isabella signed the Edict of Expulsion. They were there, and not further up north where their capital was. They were there because they had just finished a campaign against the Muslims. The Muslims were expelled and completely destroyed in Spain. The last kingdom, the last holdout of the Muslims was Granada. And they, in January, Ferdinand and Isabella beat and destroyed the Muslims. They finished with the Muslims. Now they turn their attention to the Jews. They're still down there. They haven't left yet in the Hall of Ambassadors. I was there a couple of years ago, and I brought 50 American Jews on a tour, a Jewish history tour to Europe. We came to the Hall of Ambassadors. I read the Edict of Expulsion. And then we started to sing Am Yisrael Chai. And all the guards went crazy, and everybody in the room, it's a big room, everybody's looking at these crazy Jews, what are they doing? And we sang Am Yisrael Chai in the Hall of the Ambassadors, Dafka, you kicked us out, you wanted to destroy us, you wanted to do it, and Tisha B'Av, it all fits with Tisha B'Av, but Netzach Yisrael Lo Yisharka, and we're here, and we're going to sing, and we're going to celebrate our survival. When did this happen? On Tisha B'Av. Now, the truth of the matter is that it didn't happen on Tisha B'Av. The truth of the matter is, if you make the Cheshbon, what happened was, I told you, at the end of March is when they signed the Edict of Expulsion. Jews were given 3 months to leave. It didn't take effect until the end of April, because Abarbanel and others fought to try to stave off the Edict of Expulsion. So it kicked in at the end of April. Now they have 3 months. The clock starts to tick the end of April. May, June, July. July 31st, 1492, was the 7th of Av. So I'm a historian, but doesn't bother me. 7th of Av, 9th of Av, it's close enough. Give it to Abarbanel. He, after all, he was there. So this is the famous Abarbanel. Now, how does the Abarbanel begin this description? Because he says that there were a number of events that happened on Tisha B'Av. This is only the last one. For example, the first expulsion of the Jews, the first medieval expulsion of the Jews, was from England in the year 1290. When in 1290 were the Jews expelled? Zogt Abarbanel, it was on Tisha B'Av. Cecil Roth, who's a historian, has an article on the expulsion of the Jews from England, and the only proof that historians have that the expulsion of the Jews from England in 1290 was on Tisha B'Av is this Abarbanel. So this is a Chashuv Abarbanel. Now listen how he introduces this discussion. The Hazman, the end of the third line, Hamuchan Litzorosov Vuachodesha Kavula Raoso Chodeshav. How does the Abarbanel refer to Chodeshav? Again, I read this Abarbanel 40 times. And then I went back, and there it is again. Muchan. It's the same language. It's set aside. Now the Abarbanel says it in the context of Chodesh. He's talking about Chodeshav. But the reality, the dates that he gives, the events, the episodes that he describes, he claims happened on Tisha B'Av. Once again, a language, it's a technical language. I thought for a long time, I never put these three pieces together. And I'm on the lookout, so you'll do me a favor, if you ever come across Yom Muchan anywhere in some piyut or some poem or some historical chronicle and the connection with Tisha B'Av, please let me know. I think, I suspect that it happens more than these three places. But the three places are fascinating. Number one, a halachic source, the Rambam and the Mishnah Torah. Number two, a piyut. And number three, an exegetical comment, Parshanut of the Abarbanel on Sefer Yomim. So Adkan, my first point. There are three phrases that really speak to the core of the essence of what Tisha B'Av is. Number one, it's a Yom Chayiv. Ad Kedei Kach, that's the only proof text, as it were, for the Gemara that the second Churban happened, because it's a Yom Chayiv. Willy-nilly, as Rabbi Soloveitchik used to say, had to happen on Tisha. When else was it going to happen? Of course it happened on Tisha. It's a Yom Chayev. Chayev things happen on a Yom Chayev. Number two, it's a Huchpelu Botzoros. And number three, it's a Yom Muchan. It's a Yom with something fundamentally bad, negative. It's karma. The karma is no good. It's jinx. This day is a bad day. However, Rabbi Soloveitchik continued to say, and this plays a significant role in the book, that the real significance of Tisha B'Av is not limited to what happened on that day. The real significance of Tisha B'Av is the fact that Tisha B'Av is a day that's set aside and designated to commemorate all Jewish tragedies, whether or not they happen to fall on Tisha B'Av. We see Tisha B'Av as the day on which we remember, we mourn for, we commemorate all Jewish tragedies. That's the day under which the totality of Jewish suffering is subsumed. Could have happened on Tisha B'Av, could not have happened on Tisha B'Av, it doesn't matter. We pour everything into Tisha B'Av. And the proof text of the Rav was from one of the keynotes that we say on Tisha B'Av in the context of the destruction wrought by the Crusaders in 1096 of the three major German Rhineland Jewish communities of Speyer, Worms, and Mainz. So you know that in 1095, the Pope in southern France calls for a crusade. 1096, they start to move. The crusade is called by the Pope, Urban II, in Clermont, in southern France, in order to liberate the Holy Land from the infidels. The Holy Land is Jerusalem. The infidels are the Muslims. Since the middle of the 7th century, the Muslims have taken control over the Holy Land. And for all kinds of historical reasons, by the time we come to the end of the 11th century, Christendom says, Maspik, it's enough already. It's a bizyonis, it's terrible that the Muslims have control. It's time that we reassert ourselves. So, the Pope wants Christendom to go retake the Holy Land from the Muslims. Say the Christians to themselves, why do I have to wait 3 years? They finally succeeded in 1099. Right, Shtel Zechvor took them 3 years, from 1096 to go from France and Germany to go to the Holy Land. It took them 3 years until they were able to get there and to conquer. Why do I have to wait 3 years to kill infidels? If I have infidels right over here, to do on my backyard, I have infidels. Namely, they're Jews. So I can kill some Jews and be Mekayim the mitzvah of killing infidels. Why do I have to wait 3 years? So they destroy Jewish communities. There are four kinos on Tisha B'Av that talk about the Crusades. Our minig is the Rav said only two of them. He said two out of the four. The first one is very general and talks poetically about the loss of Torah. The second one is very specific. It's actually very historical and identifies names, places, and dates. And I Xeroxed for you the relevant passage on page 3. The bottom half of page 3 talks about specifically and explicitly Speyer, Worms, and Mainz, and gives us the dates that they were destroyed. Basheni, here, Va'af apa yizlu mayim, the top of the bottom part of page 3, my eye cries, Va'konein mar al haruge ashpira, ashpira is spire. When was spire destroyed? Basheni bishmonebo, on the second month, what's the second month? Nisan Iyar, on the eighth day of Chodesh Iyar. Next paragraph, I cry for Kahal Vermeiza Bechuna uBechura. When was Worms destroyed? The Esr Mushlosha Bechodesh Ziv. Chodesh Ziv is another way to say Iyar, on the 23rd. And uBechodesh Hashlishi in Sivan Bekriyas Halel Lishorara. What's the reference? Bekriyas Halel Lishorara and Chodesh Sivan. It's a reference to, could potentially there are two references. What are the two potential possibilities? When do you read Halel on Chodesh Sivan? Either Rosh Chodesh or Shavuos. But it wasn't Shavuos. It's talking about Rosh Chodesh. So on the 23rd of Iyar on Rosh Chodesh, Sivan Worms was destroyed. And then in the last one, Mainz, when is Mainz destroyed? Bechodesh HaShlishi B'Shlishi. So the Baal HaKina tells us exactly when the destruction took place. When did the destruction take place? In Chodesh Iyar? And a little bit into Chodesh Sivan. Next page. Asks then the Baal HaKina in the next paragraph, so why am I mentioning it today? Why am I mentioning the destruction wrought by the Crusaders on Tisha B'Av if I just told you 4 lines ago that it didn't happen on Tisha B'Av? I just told you when it happened. I told you Beferish when it happened. So why am I saying it? Why am I saying it today? What does it have to do with today? Answers the Baal HaKina, V'chi ein lahosif moed shever v'savero, tachaskein hayom liv yosi aora. We don't add days of mourning. And lehosif moed sheva v'saver. We don't add days of mourning. Since we don't add days of mourning, when do I mourn? I mourn today. I mourn on Tisha B'Av. This phrase in the Kina became a mantra. Became literally a mantra. I've discovered now about 6 or 7 different sources that use this Kina to explain why it is that we try to subsume everything under Tisha B'Av, including up to and including the Holocaust under Tisha B'Av. The argument against the establishment of a Yom HaShoah, which is on Chav Zayin Nisan, the traditional argument is this Kina. Ein lahosif moed sheva v'saveira. I xerox below on the right hand side a text that talks about how the Brisker Rav, Rabbi Soloveitchik's uncle, the Griz, Rav Velvel Brisker, the brother of Rav Moshe, the brother of Rabbi Soloveitchik's father, Rav Moshe, Rav Velvel Brisker, the Brisker Rav lived in Yerushalayim, when asked about the establishment of a special day to commemorate the Holocaust, was opposed, and was opposed solely on the grounds of this Kina. This Kina says you don't add days. You'll tell me it's a poetry, it's a Kina, since when do you paskin from a Kina? So he says at the end, he realizes that the only text is a Kina, but that's it, it's good enough for him. And Rabbi Soloveitchik repeatedly expressed opposition to the establishment of Yom HaShoah based on this, because it all should be on Tisha B'Av. Everything should be on Tisha B'Av. Ein lahosif. So what is Tisha B'Av? The second fundamental point that I want to make is, the first is, Tisha B'Av itself has a character, has what I would call a trifold character, namely Yom Chai of Huchpelu and Yom Ruchan. The second point is, ultimately, it doesn't really matter whether it happened on Tisha B'Av. Ultimately, Tisha B'Av is a day under whose rubric, or in whose worldview, in whose context we place all Jewish tragedy, up to and including also the Shoah. And now my third point. And my third point is, the talk is entitled From Something, From Tragedy to Consolation. There's a real irony here, and I want to come back to where I started. Rabbi Soloveitchik quoted a Medrash Eicha, which is on the left-hand side of page 4. The Medrash Eicha says a mashal. The Pasuk says in Tehillim, Mizmor liyosef, Elokim ba'u goyim benachlosecha. Mizmor liyosef, Elokim ba'u goyim benachlosecha. Translate, Mizmor liyosef, it's a song to Asaf. Elokim, O Lord, ba'u goyim benachlosecha, the heathens have come into your, the goyim have come into your inheritance. In fact, the Medrash, Mizmor liyosef, what is it? You're going to sing and dance because bo goyim benachlosecha, that's a reason for a mizmor? Kina la'asaf, mabayale. Bechia la'asaf. The fact that bo goyim benachlosecha should not elicit in us a sense of mizmor. Mizmor is, I'm happy, I'm singing, I'm dancing. A mizmor? It's anything but a mizmor, it's the opposite. It's a kina, it's a bechi. It's horrible, bo goyim benachlosecha. Why do you say mizmor? So the Medrash says, I'll tell you. So the mashal is to a son of a king. The king was very attached to this son and loved the son very much and made a beautiful house for the son. And then the son was Yotze L'Tarbus Ra. The son turned his back on the king and didn't behave in an appropriate fashion. What did the king do? Destroyed the house that he made for the son. When the king destroys the house he makes for the son, so the pedagogue, the Medrash actually uses the Lashon, the pedagogue, it's a Greek word, the teacher, the tutor of the son, takes out a harp and starts to play. And everybody comes to him and says, what are you, crazy? What are you, wait, you're playing an instrument when the house of your student has now been destroyed? So he says, yeah, I am. Why? Because who deserved to be destroyed? Who really deserved to be punished? Says the tutor. The kid deserved to be punished. Kid misbehaves, the kid gets punished. What did Hashem do? Hashem did not punish the kid. Hashem vented his anger on the house that he built for the kid. The kid emerged unscathed. Memela, I'm a happy camper. Because my student is still around. My student is the one who deserved. My student was spared. Zushtel, the Nimshal is the Beis HaMikdash. Who deserved to be punished? Who deserved to be punished on Tisha B'Av? Klal Yisrael. Mipnei chata'enu, galinu me'artzenu, rachmana litzlan, it could have been worse. What did Hashem do? Shafach chamoso al eitzim va'al avanim, says the Midrash. God vented his anger on what? On the building, on the Beis HaMikdash. And spared the people. He vented his anger on the Beis HaMikdash, he spared the people. Mizmar la'asaf, Elokim bo goyim benachal osecha, that you destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and you didn't destroy the people. Rabbi Soloveitchik explained how all day Tisha B'Av there was a fight in the Bezin Shalmaila, in the Pamalia Shalmaila. There was a huge debate. And they were fighting and they were arguing, are the Jews going to be destroyed? Are the Jews not going to be destroyed? And then what happened? You remember now, you know exactly when it happened. Tisha B'Av, Samach L'Chashecha, it's almost over. A little bit before dark, the Beis HaMikdash is burned. What happens? Paradox. Paradox. Irony. It doesn't get more ironic or paradoxical than this. And it's going to sound odd and bizarre to you. The moment the Beis HaMikdash is burned, oh my God, we're saved. The moment the Beis HaMikdash is burnt, the Jews knew that they would have a future. The moment the Beis HaMikdash was burnt is dafka the moment where the Jews realized that the Beis Din Shalmaila paskind, that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed and nothing. Shafa chamaso aleitzim v'alav. So take a look on the last page. I have 2 minutes. Question is, why do we say Nachem only at Mincha? There's a machlokes ga'onim. If you look at the tour, there's a machlokes haposkin. There's a machlokes rishonim. The tour, the Beis Yosef, on the top of page 5. Some, in fact, did say Nachem all the way through. And some say Nachem only at Mincha. We paskin that we say Nachem only at Mincha. Why do we say Nachem only at Mincha? Look at the Beis Yosef. I apologize for the tiny print where the little carrot there is on the right-hand side. V'nira li, and the little aleph. V'nira li shata'am rabbeinu. Sadia. Why is it that we only say it at Mincha? Mishum de le'es erev hitzisu bo esh. Hilkach ba'oso sha'o mazkirin shiflos Yerushalayim va'aveleha u'mispalalin al tanchumeha. What does Reb Sadia Gaon say according to the Beis Yosef? Why is it that we only say Nachem et Mincha? Because that's when the Beis HaMikdash was burnt. So we remember Shiflus Yerushalayim and we pray for Nachamas Yerushalayim. But why should that be? How does that follow? If the Beis HaMikdash was burnt then, that's what I understand, that I have to remember and think about and focus on Shiflus Yerushalayim. Why do I talk about Nachama? Ein Menachemin, the halachic principle is, B'shoah Shemeso Muto Lufanav. Somebody's an Onen, Rachmana Luslan, there isn't Lach. Can't say, I'm walking Menachem Eschem until after the Kavura. Because they menachem, the Beis HaMikdash is burning. What kind of nechama is it? But the answer is, and it puts everything on its head. I'd say for 98% of my life, I thought that the burning of the Beis HaMikdash was horrible. I thought that the burning of the Beis HaMikdash was the worst thing. But the answer is that there is some consolation in the very burning. The very burning is mechayev and nechama. Because of that medrash. The very burning says that the Jewish people has a kiyum, that the Jewish people has a future. And therefore Rabbi Soloveitchik said, that explains why is it that we say Nachem et Mincha, and we have all the kulas in Mincha, that's how I began. Why is it? It's ironic. Dafka, the moment the Beis HaMikdash is burnt, dafka, then it gets easier? The answer is yes. The answer is yes, because the burning of the Beis HaMikdash, as horrible as it was, at least allowed for the Jewish people to continue. And our tefillah is, especially during these difficult times for Klal Yisrael, our tefillah is that the continuity of the Jewish people should be assured and that we should have Shalom al Yisrael, we should have Zuchusim, we should have a Nitzachon in Eretz Yisrael, and the Pasuk in Zechariah that I mentioned should be fulfilled. The Pasuk begins, Koam HaShem Tzvakos Tzomer Revi, Tzomer Chamishi, Tzomer Shvi, Tzomer Asiri, and the Pasuk ends, Yihi Yelebes Yehuda, l'sasa v'l'simcha, that they should become times of simcha for us and for Klal Yisrael.
Very interesting. What's your name? Avram Gershwitz. I work for chemistry. I work in chemistry department.
A Sorahili Yakov.